wait, start time. President Wilburn?
Here.
Vice President Hickman?
Present.
Director Starr?
Here.
Director Moreland?
Here.
Division 4 is vacant. Council Cooper?
Here.
Information System Manager Martinez?
Here.
Environmental Health and Safety Manager Perrin?
Here.
Finance Manager Wong?
Here.
Power Division Manager Leon?
Here.
Regulatory and Compliance Manager McKillop?
Here.
Water Treatment Superintendent Shipman?
Here.
And myself, General Manager Mosley. Who do we have participating online?
We had two, and then they dropped off as soon as we started.
So we had two attendees, and they've both dropped off at this point?
Yes.
We'll give them a minute. Would you let me know if they come back on?
I will.
Okay, can we stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
Salute. Pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Start the business item.
Yes, thank you, directors and Mr. President. You'll notice that the agenda is switched up a little bit today, so our first action of today is a business item, and that will be under tab 1. Tab 1, as you see on the agenda, is an Assembly Bill 361, which is essentially a resolution authorizing remote meetings for health and safety and anti-spread during the COVID-19 and Delta variant pandemic. So what the board is able to do, if you choose so, is we can read through this resolution, and if you'd like to continue to offer remote meetings and attendance, including yourselves as directors, we would want to authorize this resolution. And then every 30 days thereafter, if we wanted to continue with that until this was to expire, we would have to do a reopener or a re-resolution, if you will, every 30 days. For me personally, as your general manager, you know, the primary reason why I'd like to see us do this at least for another month or two, if we could, is really the size of our boardroom. You know, one of the challenges, you can see, we're already kind of pushing our limits right now, just directors, immediate staff, and council. When this boardroom opens back up, we know what that looks like when public participation and other employees and things may want to come in for topics. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have difficulty managing the size of that audience. So this is a mechanism to continue to try to meet our health and safety needs as well as prevent spread, if we could, of COVID and the variant. So if you guys have an interest as directors in approving this resolution, like I said, this would be good for 30 days, and then we need to revisit it at 30 days and see if we want to continue. The other option, if we want to really try to start opening up our boardroom back to the public, we may need to talk about a different venue, finding a location that is larger in size to accommodate, you know, a 6 foot apart, those types of things. So.
I mean, intent here is just to continue doing things as we are, right? Not take the whole meeting remote.
No, to continue doing what we're doing, but it does allow you as a director the option, if you wanted to remote in during a meeting, you could do so. If you recall, pre-pandemic, if you were going to be absent at a board meeting and wanted to remote in, we needed to identify that in our agenda that you would be participating via remote. This allows you the opportunity, you know, as you come up onto a board meeting, if you did want to participate via Zoom, you could do so.
Good. You need a motion for that?
Yeah, we'll probably go through some of the highlights of the resolution if you have an interest in adopting this.
We do not need to read it, but we can take questions or additional comments, public input at some point, and then the motion would be adoption of the resolution number.
We do have one anonymous online.
Okay, thank you.
So on this, along these lines, conceptually, from what I found, airflow seems to be the most important thing. The changing of airflow, that seems to be even more important than distancing and everything else. That's number one. So conceptually, why couldn't we evacuate the air in here every couple of minutes? Let's just say with the strategically placed exhaust fan at the door, something like that. I'm for the resolution, but when we do get back to normal, maybe that's something to a cost-effective, simple solution to make this work.
Yeah, we could certainly, obviously, to do something built in would probably be pretty expensive. We could look at that as well, but maybe there are portable solutions, to your point, that could help recirculate and move air within the room. Yeah,
if one of the engineers on staff can do some air calcs about, you know, how fast the air changes out, say every 2 minutes, something like that.
Unfortunately, our only engineer on staff is also a power division manager. But I got the message.
Well, I'm sure you could still punch some numbers on airflow calculations. He's all over it, look.
Only if we can use Ohm's Law, right, Dan?
Power systems.
Okay.
I think the numbers are still up in the county, and it makes sense to continue the way we are, at least for the next month or two. And revisit each month.
Yeah, they're even talking about another variance coming on later. We might be stuck with this a long time.
Any comments from public, Art?
Nothing in the inbox as of 2:14.
Nothing written. If you'd like to raise your hand and you're on the phone, please press star 9. Nothing.
Okay. I like to keep it as it is. I think it works fine. I'll make a motion to adopt resolution number 2021 through 26A10 as written.
Okay, first, we have a second. We already discussed the public, so let's go ahead and vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. 4 ayes. Okay, thank you, Ray.
Thank you. We'll move on to minutes.
Tab 2, approval of minutes. Any questions on the minutes? The minutes is written.
Second.
Any questions from the public? Nothing online?
Nothing in the inbox as of 2:15.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. 4 ayes. Steve, how are you doing today?
Good today. Thank you.
Yeah.
Good afternoon, directors. Call your attention to tab 3. Approval of warrants and checks. We've got our standard listing. It's a bigger month. September was a bigger month. I'll explain that in just a second. In terms of expenses, checks that we wrote. Turning to page 1 on our check listings, we'll see a number of charges that went to project 2021-0971. That was our SCADA upgrade project, and Dan will give you an update on that. When he does his report. Right in the middle of the page was a check number 60776, was a payment to LaPorte Fire Department. I think we've talked about this, but it only comes up once a year, so I asked Dan to give us a reminder of how that arrangement works.
This is a payment that agency makes to the LaPorte Fire Department for leasing their facilities at the Lexington Hill communications site. We have a radio repeater, so the fire department has a comm building and tower, and we lease space in the comm room and the tower for our radio telemetry repeater system, which gets our signals from Lillibrads Valley reservoir levels and so forth, and then flows into our system. So it's a yearly lease of their facilities.
Thank you,
Dan. A little further down on that page, 60783. Was a payment as a payment to PG&E, among other things. It's a monthly interconnection agreement payment, but it also included an annual fee for our distribution services that will continue on over the years. It's for carrying the power over the lines from the powerhouses themselves. So Dan, if I'm correct, those charges will continue with BPAs as well.
Yes. And that was a yearly charge?
Correct. It's a number of charges included in that for all of the powerhouses.
So all of the powerhouses for that 8,000 and some change?
Correct.
Per year?
For the year. And that also, it's about half of that, and then the other half is the monthly interconnect fees.
One more time. So the monthly ones are paid within that fee?
They have to be accrued at the same time.
So they're all accrued at this one time?
Right.
Okay. So in total, the $8,500, right?
Correct for this month. In future months, it'll be $4,000 or so for the interconnect fees, which are on monthly leases. So they're getting us a couple different ways.
Still.
Yeah. Let me turn to page 2, and we had a couple payments there let me just clarify for you. Check number 60800, that's one of our employees. We have an employee computer purchase loan agreement, and we made a purchase on behalf of this employee at his request. Those get all paid back with automatic employee payroll deductions. We made the deposit at his request, but then the computer itself wasn't available, so we had to refund that payment back to the employee. So that's what that check is all about. Further down on page 2 is a payment to Thatcher Company 60821. And all I've got are supplies here. But I thought I'd take an opportunity to have John share just a little bit about what those supplies really were.
Sure. So the Thatcher Company is where we get our chlorine gas from. And over the summer, they had a couple of the largest plants in the United States went down for unexpected outages. So we were a little bit concerned about maybe, you know, getting behind and not being able to get the product. So we're carrying a little more product on site right now, which is why the cost has increased. We're in really good shape. We don't really have any concerns, and it looks like everything's back on track.
Thank you, John. Mm-hmm. On page 3, we had a payment top near the top, check number 60839 to Open Systems, OSI, Open Systems International. That was for our SCADA upgrade project, and Dan will give you a little update on that in his report. Further down on that page, 60866 was a payment on our credit card through U.S. Bank. Just noting the recording fee is included in that payment. Those were for a part of that. It's not the whole $800. It was let me see how much was that. It was just $30 of that, but it did include encroachment permits. One of the encroachment permits that we purchased at the county for Worldport. Then, on page 3, you see some big payments near the bottom to U.S. Bank and the Signature Financial. Those are debt service payments that were due on October 1st, so we made those. The $404,000 was just an interest payment on our 2016 minor transfer treatment plant project improvement bonds. And then the $900,000 payment right underneath that to Signature Financial was for our 2019 private loan that we secured to pay for the Lost Creek Dam project improvements.
Steve, on that bond, when is there a maturity date, or do we have a balloon payment coming on that?
On the 2016 or the 2019?
2016.
2016 goes out for another 30 years or so, 25 years.
Just interest for 25 to 30 years?
Yeah.
Okay. 28 left.
Okay.
And that was under 3, is what we ended up with. Okay. And then I think we'll just call attention to the last check, actually, page 5 or 6. The payment to VistaNet was for some services that actually we made the deposit will carry us through next year. But Art, maybe you can explain a little bit more on that. That's VistaNet store. Yeah, SAN hardware support and then some service care as well.
Absolutely. Those are basically pass-throughs. They are payments to the manufacturers for after-hour warranty support. These servers and services, if they go down, put us in a difficult situation, so we have 24-hour support on these. They can usually get us hardware replacements next day or within 8 hours. So it is a little bit $2,200 for the SAN support, but the cost of us being down for more than 24 hours is far more than that.
Okay. Any of the other managers or Rafe, any other comments?
Page 406, about halfway down, check number 60888 for Dewberry Engineers. This is the Miami Trans Dam inundation mapping that Kristen has referred to in the previous months during the board meetings. This was budgeted compliance requirement item, and that amount is actually below budget, so we came in under budget on file that. And again, that was a non-optional compliance need. And then almost down to the bottom, Manazzi Soros legal fees, you can see pretty good payment was made for professional services in August. Again, that was a mix of the 2021 water transfer and then the closed session items, with the largest portion being tied to the North Dakota Water District closed session items, and then the Glaze closed session item was a following second. Under my comments, I'll check something else. Thank you.
Any other questions? It was a big month. Again, $1.3 million, those were just those two payments for debt service principal and interest payments. So.
Thank you, Steve. Steve. Oh, you have a motion?
I'll make one. I move approval of expenditures for the month of September 2021 in the amount of $2,294,907.16 and authorize a transfer of $1.25 million from the TCB General Fund to the TCB Accounts Payable and Payroll Fund for the payment of regular operating expenses.
Thank you.
I'll second.
First, a second. Any comments out there?
Nothing online?
Nothing in the inbox as of 2:25.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Four ayes. Thank you. And you sure you want to get involved in this? Yeah, as I said, the door locked.
We're all thinking the same thing. Don't let her go.
So thank you. Our next business item, tab 4, is the Division 4 vacancy that we've published and spoke about over the last 2 months. So since the time we've published that, we've received one candidate for seeking appointment to that position. She's here today. This is Ruth Wright. Each of you have her statement of interest for appointment letter, as well as a personalized letter which is published on her interest and why she's interested in becoming a director with South Feather. So at this point, I would like to ask Ms. Wright to come to the podium and give all of you an opportunity to ask any questions you may have.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for coming today.
So, appreciate your interest.
So what makes you like to apply?
I am a long-time community resident. I've lived here all my life. I've always been in the South Feather Water and Power District, and I just felt compelled to get involved in my community and see if I could be of any value to the board.
You work for City of Morrow, correct?
Yes, I'm currently working for the City of Morrow.
Does that interfere? I mean, are you available Tuesday afternoons?
No, I spoke to my boss about it, and he actually encouraged me to apply.
Yeah. How do you feel about the relationship between South Feather and Cowater and that whole issue surrounding the disparity in fees for water.
I feel very fortunate that I live in this. I have been enjoying very reasonable rates for a very long time, so I'm very thankful that I know that a lot of people think twice about buying homes in that district. So.
She does a great job at the city, her where I live.
Thank you.
Father employees.
Thank you.
Respect you.
So why has the city failed to address that situation and take aggressive measures to correct that for the citizens of the city of Orlo?
It doesn't make a financial sense.
As far as?
The city? Getting involved, and I mean, right now it's not our burden, so getting involved would put a lot of financial strain on the city.
Other than the reduced property taxes, the brown lawns, the other plight due to the cost of water in the city of Orville, I would argue that it would make economic sense for the city to address that issue, step up and do the right thing, and, you know, even eminent domain if necessary to correct that situation for the city of Orville.
Yeah, I think that has been discussed, and I think the costs have prohibited anything like that happening.
So would you feel comfortable if that issue continues to escalate with the citizens of Orlo and the city continues to be called out for being weak and failing to do the right thing and protect their citizens? How do you feel about that? If that situation escalates, are you going to be comfortable with that, residing in both worlds? At the fabulous South Bend Water Agency that does right by its customers compared to the city of Oroville that lets this situation continue to happen, continues to take big money from people that are against doing the right things for the citizens. Is that going to be an issue with you?
I don't see a conflict, yeah.
Director Hickman, if I may, I would actually step in scenarios like that and would expect this right, or Director Wright, if that was the case, to abstain in both entities, whether it was, so if that was a topic of conversation, City of Orville, she'd have to abstain any type of voting or input, just perform her duties as directed here at South Feather. If that was a voted business type topic or anything, I'd ask that she do the same. Am I incorrect there, Council?
No, and even more broadly, you know, our job, my job, and Wraith's job is to make sure that as business items come up, there are occasions where you have conflicts as directors. And depending on the nature of the conflict, that may be an abstention, or it may mean the matter just can't come to the board, which occasionally, it's a minority of situations, but occasionally it does happen. We've had members in the past have to abstain, and it would be no different from you.
And I have no voting rights on that topic either, so I don't make those decisions.
You are just an employee of the City of Oracle.
Right, that would go to council.
Who's your direct supervisor at the city?
Bill LeGrone, city administrator.
Okay, so you report directly to the city administrator. Okay.
But I am employed by the council. I'm a contract employee.
Not to press you so hard on that issue, but I just find it repulsive that the city of Orville continues to be weak and not do the right thing for the citizens of the city of Orville. I feel strongly about that, clearly.
Yeah, I would talk to you. That's a very important issue. Mm-hmm. It's been going on way too long, and like Todd said, the city needs to really step up.
Yeah.
But what other direction do you think the city can do to get their water?
Impose eminent domain.
The
go
city
all the way
Orville,
take it to the map.
The city of Orville should take it over.
If I may, Director, does that directly apply to whether or not we make a decision on the issue for the record today?
It doesn't.
I like to see how she handles uncomfortable situations. It's all part of the. All part of the.
Do it all the time.
Yeah, you do.
I respect your opinion.
Have you been to a city board or council meeting before? Ruth, what board experience do you have?
Board experience.
Yeah.
I attend council meetings twice a month, and so I do staff reports. I report to the council, and I participate and I understand how they work.
Have you been on a board before?
No.
I have a couple questions, if that's okay. Just, Ms. Wright, your eligibility for office, can you confirm that you're a resident or landowner of Division 4?
Yes, I can confirm that.
And can you confirm that you're a registered voter of Division 4?
Yes, I can confirm that.
Very good. You're kind of getting off easy with the questions compared to what's up there.
Yeah.
There's three of us, so.
Yeah, there were some interviews there.
Yeah, Ruth, you're really lucky when Rick did it. There was a lot of competition.
Oh, wow.
Do you have any questions for us?
What are you expecting to see from me as a board member?
I think just bring good common sense to the board, bring your experience. You've got some financial experience, it looks like, so that's important, and do your best to make good decisions. And fix the city problem according to Tom.
And what we do as board members, we try to work together the best we can.
Okay.
And any problems anybody has, we'll help.
Okay.
We don't hinder nobody. We come together as teamwork.
Okay.
Anytime you need anything, call us.
Okay.
We're there. But then you got to play by the Brown Act rules. You know them, so
yeah.
Everything will be fine.
Okay. Thank you.
South Federal Building Company's loyal to the employees. It's loyal. The board's good. Todd's mellowed out from when he first came.
Well, the issues have been addressed, John.
Racy's done a good job.
Yeah.
If I may, you know what makes a highly functional board, in my opinion, is diversity in skill sets and backgrounds, right? So what I find interesting about Ms. Wright is, you know, certainly experienced with board meetings, maybe not as a director level, but certainly as participating, presenting, etc. But even more importantly, from my viewing lens, finance manager supports information technology, supports human resources in current professional capacity. Those are all skill sets that could bring value and keep myself and staff on our toes to make sure we're doing the right things as well. There's a good check and balance from that, so I find that quite appealing, quite honestly. So.
Thank you.
Yeah. I appreciate that skill set as well.
Yeah, no problem.
I think that's something that's maybe lacking in experience among the current board. So that's a nice addition.
All right, any other questions?
How do you feel being lobbied by citizens that are, say, irate? What about other people from other districts that want to lobby you and petition you for their interests? How do you feel about dealing with difficult people in general?
I feel like it's really important to listen to people, whether I agree with them or not, but I feel like just listening, and I feel like I do a good job of putting myself in their shoes and trying to see at least where they're coming from, whether that's my position or not. So I would deal with that by listening and doing the best I can.
How familiar are you with South Feather in general, besides the fact that you have, you know, the water from South Feather?
I would say I'm very familiar with everything that's on your website. So.
Okay. Fair. Did your homework?
That's that. I have done my homework. I've read a lot of agendas. I've read everything on the website. I've read about your litigation. I've done everything I can to be prepared as far as that goes, but I wouldn't say that I'm.
You dug into Steve's work yet?
Yeah. You have a great finance manager.
That's right. Okay. All right. So we're gonna need a vote or a motion?
Yeah, I mean you can do two things. This is a little unusual because we have one candidate that's applied. You know, normally we would listen to multiple,
sure,
ask them to leave the room and talk freely about them. So this really comes down to whether or not you're comfortable with making an appointment of Ms. Wright, or if you want to not and go a different way. A different way could mean, based on timing, an appointment by the county.
Supervisors,
thank you.
I think she'd be a good addition to the group. I'm born or building in the area, you know the people. And then I'll be up.
All right. I move that Ruth Wright be appointed as Division 4 Director for the balance of term ending December 31st, 2022.
I'll second that. Just a minor correction. I'm sorry, Mr. President. I didn't noticed this until you just spoke it, but the term will end on the first Friday in December at noon, whatever that date is.
First Friday in December?
Yes, at noon. And you do understand this, right? This is an interim appointment, so if you want to run again for the balance of this term, you'll need to pull papers in July, August time, early August time period. And then potentially others could pull papers, and there may be an election, depending on the outcome, that the candidate that prevails would then serve for the balance of the four-year term, so additional 2 years.
Yes, I'm going to amend my motion. I move that Ruth Wright be appointed to Division 4 Director for the balance of the term ending the first Friday of December of 2022.
I'll second that.
All right, so we have first, we have second. Any public comment?
No public comment. I will reiterate to use the raise hand function for *9 if you're calling in from the phone.
Nothing in the email inbox as of 2:38.
All in favor?
Aye.
Welcome aboard. Grab a chair.
Hang on.
Oh, you got to be.
You need to take a certificate of appointment. Out of office. This is Sherry.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Sherry. Hi. Are you ready to swear in? Okay. I raise your right hand. I state your name.
I, Ruth Wright.
Do solemnly swear or affirm.
Do solemnly swear and affirm.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance.
To the Constitution of the United States.
To the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation.
Without any mental reservation.
Or purpose of evasion.
Or purpose of evasion.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge.
And I will well and faithfully discharge
the duties upon which I am about to enter.
The duties upon which I'm about to enter.
Excellent. That's it. Thank you. Thank you.
Congratulations.
So if you'd like, you can grab your board packets.
I'll switch.
All right. Let's move on to staff reports.
Tab 5 is where we're at. Congratulations, Jason. Let me just walk through a couple of things that we've got going on. We received a payment from FEMA for the North Complex West Zone from the 2020 Bear Fire. And then just yesterday, this is the FEMA portion that I reported here, $16,144. Cal OES portion just came in yesterday. That was a $4,000 payment. So
that how much did you say, $4,000?
$4,036.
Thank you.
Yeah. And again, Jamie has done most of the work on that. Appreciate your efforts, Jamie. We did send out a proposal for OPEB, our OPEB actuarial valuation calculations for December 31st, and then the roll forward as of December, for the next year as well. These numbers get incorporated into our annual financial report. And we actually got a response from that, and we signed the agreement with a firm that helped us out just this past year, came in less than $5,000. So we've issued that purchase order and we'll be receiving those services. You will not see the report until February or so, because it's as of our numbers and our employees as of December 31st, 2021. So we still have some things to do or some time to get through to that point, but it is a big liability. We are sitting on an $18 million OPEB liability, which is, of course goes over many years, but still it's a big number. And we'll want to work hard at seeing what those numbers come in at, and then and report those as soon as we can to you as well. Okay, those are all the decisions that have been made with regards to our existing MOUs for other post-employment benefits, which is, of course, health, basically health benefits for retired employees.
Steve, how much of this $18 million is unfunded?
At this point, all of it, technically.
Right.
We have received some money, maybe $3 million, that we're just kind of holding, but it's unrestricted and unreserved. It's just on the books. But we haven't set it aside formally, haven't made any formal resolutions. We will, well, I guess I could talk about that two paragraphs down here. We will be giving that consideration in our 2022 budget decisions. Up until now, we've been conscious about just keeping the cash, which made it available for us in case we had some needs, and this gave us some flexibility. But given our the finances that have come in even just this week, and our new power purchase agreement probably gives us some wiggle room that we can maybe set aside this money and reserve it for these liabilities. Once you reserved it, it was hard to get. It's difficult to get any of that back out for cash flow needs or budget needs. So that we just want to be careful about that when we make the decisions to go that way. Then also with regards to RFPs, we have an independent an RFP out for independent auditing services, and that's an information item later on in your agenda later this afternoon. And then just a comment on our budget, continuing to work towards that. You know, we have the December 31st end of fiscal year. January 1st will be the start of our new fiscal year, and so we'll be adopting our budget. We want to be adopting our budget in November. Finance Committee, Directors Wilburn and Hickman, we've scheduled Tuesday, November 9th, for a 2 o'clock Finance Committee meeting. So that's a couple weeks away, but at that point, we'll be proposing and have you review revenues and expenses for the current year and then for 2022 as well, a little more detail.
Directors, have you confirmed, are you both still available on the 9th?
I don't believe we've confirmed that, but maybe we can talk about dates, and do we need that in here?
It's just us, so okay. If that doesn't work, we just need to get it on the calendar.
Okay. Okay.
It's in my calendar, so I'm good on that.
Okay. Very good. We've talked about that date, but we haven't.
Okay. Let me check, and I'll let you guys know tomorrow on that.
Appreciate that. The 11th. Thursday of that week is Veterans Day holiday, so you have to work around that. And then we do need something around that time just so that we have enough time to prepare a final budget for you in November meeting.
So first question for Ruth as a board member. So in relation to this, how many years do you think an auditor should be with our agency for this purpose? You think 9 years is too much?
That is a very long time,
That's
yes.
That's a long time, right?
Yeah, we have a policy at the city that's every 3 years we revolve, and we do an RFP, and we could pick the same one if the cost is down and they have to change the engagement partner.
That's what's happened here, because it's been three rounds, and we had a pretty heavy debate 3 years ago on what auditors ultimately ended up with the same firm, different individuals. Mm-hmm. We feel strongly at this point we need to keep that fresh. The director of the school.
Go kind of move into the numbers a little bit. Attachments. Page one, which is just chart one. A standard chart you can see. August was very, very good, well above average, and our highest revenue for. Power generation revenue that we've seen in the last 5 years at least. September, same thing, it's the red bar, was again well above average and higher than we've seen in past years. Preliminary numbers from Dan, October will be good as well, significantly above average. Probably not historically high, but at least well above average. So those are all good signs for us. This chart does not include the PG&E settlement dollars, which we just received yesterday as well. So these are true generation numbers generated this year. And then on page 2, you can see the cumulative effect of where we stand, the bar. It's the gold type of bar, 2021 through September is below average of where we have been historically, but it's not our worst. We got off the line there where it was historically bad. And then this month will continue to get us closer to our averages.
Is that settlement money going to go into this graph or just the first?
The water sale?
The settlement.
Is that going to go into this graph or where is that going to go?
Right now it's not on the graph. It is in the numbers.
It's the cash flow report balance sheet. Yeah. Not on the graph on the power sales.
So you can see, I'm now on page 3. This is JFAW, Joint Facilities Operating Fund. Top line is our sale of electricity, far right-hand column, we're at $13.7 million earned to date. That has come in strong, and that includes the settlement dollars as well. And we've reflected that in the $17 million estimated for this year. What that does...
That is in the actual, Steve, is that what you said?
Correct.
That's in that 13.
Right. Yeah. What that does is if you go to page 6, bottom line, our ending balance, we're looking very strong on JFAW, okay, $31.5 million. If we get through projects and activities this year, 2021, the estimate, I'm at $27.4 million. That, of course, will carry over into next year, whatever balance we have at the end of the year. But that includes projects as best we could. Remember, we just got positive word over the last month on these revenues coming through. So projects, we're very careful on our projects. And so... At this point, we have what we have, and many of these will probably be rolled over into next year. The $27 million does include settlement or payoff of prepayment, an early payment on our 2019 loan that we secured for the Lost Creek Dam project. We'll reserve those monies to pay those off, pay that off. And I booked in as well our payments both to the general fund and that will go to Northview, but that we budgeted a year ago. And that still leaves us with a pretty solid balance. And we'll talk about that in a couple weeks at our finance committee meeting and as well as we go through the budget as well, through the budget process. General fund side, starting on page 7 and going through page 9, we've reflected there again. We have additional money coming in to Slide Creek, powerhouse generations, part of that PG&E settlement that we received again just yesterday, puts us in a little bit better position. In actual numbers of page 9, you can see the actual ending balance, far right-hand column, we're close to 900,000 positive. But when pulling in all of our estimates for the year, we actually come in at a negative number, which is really not acceptable. But that will be offset by transfers in from the surplus on joint facilities down the road.
point. At this point, that's where we stand. Our finances. Things will change in the next month as we fine tune our budget numbers, both for this year and then as we look into next year. So.
Any questions for Steve?
You're very thorough and very good, Steve.
We'll be.
Thank you, Steve. That's pretty good. Thank you. All right, Dan, you're up.
Hello, good afternoon, directors. Thanks for your time. For the next few minutes here, I'd like to go over our monthly Power Division report for September with you all. First of all, I thought I might just give a couple of the high points from the our storm event that we had over the weekend, mainly Sunday, late Saturday, Sunday, and of course, into Monday. It was significant as far as the quantity of water that the precipitation that occurred. Our project operated well. Our crews worked safely. They just managed really large water flows that came through the system. And we had no damage to equipment. We had a lot of debris, a lot of trees and timber and pine needles and residual from the fires, which was plugging up the various intake strainers for the water cooling in the powerhouses. Our storage for our two reservoirs, Little Grass Valley and Sly, increased by, as of this morning when I checked, had increased by 6,200 acre feet, which was substantial. We've spilled a substantial amount of water through our through our various diversion reservoirs. Diversion reservoirs, which are downstream of our main storage, those smaller reservoirs between powerhouses, those all spilled. And as we speak, the runoff is decreasing. We're returning back to normal project operations, getting back to more or less normal conditions, project flows. And I just wanted to point out the report here. In page 6, we're sharing with you all a what's called a Northern Sierra Precipitation Aid Station Index. And this is a precipitation of weather gauges that are in 8 locations throughout Northern California. And in the current water year that we are in, which is a 2022 water year, we've already picked up 12.4 inches in the Northern California area. So this day here last year, we were at 0 inches. So the water year 21, which is the one we just finished on September 30, we accrued 24 inches. So just over last weekend, we got, you know, the volume came up to half of the previous years as far as these eight rain gauges, which are a pretty meaningful indicator of the storage precipitation in Northern California. I'd be happy to answer any more questions or details about that storm event, but with that, so operations, we are conveying water from down from Little Grass Reservoir to Little Grass Valley Reservoir to Sly. We're doing about 150 CFS. So when I wrote this report, for month's end, September, we were at 68,000 acre feet combined storage. When I wrote this report a couple weeks ago, a week and a half ago, the storage had decreased to 62, and now it's back to 68. So it's back to where we started several weeks ago. And so that's
we were moving some transfer water.
What portion of that transfer has gone through?
So we've moved the quantity of the 8,000 acre feet of transfer water through our system and then some. So we had the transfer. So we had a larger time window to work from, but operationally, due to outages of the powerhouses and maintenance, we set October 8th from October 18th through the 31st to be our transfer window. And we were intending to move, you know, say, some amount each day over that period. So to move 8,000, our goal. And we have since moved at least 8,000 and then some. And once we had moved that as of yesterday, we instructed PG&E to transition back to normal operations in comparison to operations to convey this the transfer water. So basically, we moved the block of water as per, you know, the arrangement that we had.
The nice thing is that this last weekend almost replenished what we submitted.
So effectively did. The reservoirs, you know, that amount was effectively, you know, refilled by precipitation.
Nice.
That's pretty impressive, isn't it?
And we got generation on that 8,000 acre feet?
Yes. So all of that water and the extra that has spilled does go through the generators. The generators are what, you know, breaks the pressure head down the elevation. So yes, we have the water transfer, you know, part agreement, but of course we also have the generation revenue as well.
And we got the $70.
This is the $70 was for September. And in October, the prices have been similar, so it's not exactly 70, but because we moved the water in October, this is that number. But the numbers have been higher than average. Average ISO prices have been mid to over $30 per megawatt hour. It's been like 60 and 70.
So how much money did that 8,000 acre feet generate in power?
I would have to do a calculation on that and then let you know. So it's about $100 an acre foot, roughly. So if you take the 8,000 acre feet.
At the $70 price point, or it'd be more.
Well, yeah, it's again. I could do a calculation, you know, after the fact, and provide that to you. But typically, the powerhouses, when they convey water, is that with the ISO value of around $60, tends to be about $100 per acre foot, is what that works out to. So in September, the powerhouses were run at about 31% of the total productivity. So that lower, for that chart on bottom of page one there, just shows our goal is to have the powerhouses running closer to 100%. So, but still 30%. At 30%, their productivity coupled with a good pricing ended up, you know, resulting in that $2.2 million of revenue for September. On the top of page two, we see the third column from the left, available for generation hours. There were 720 hours in September, and so our goal is to have the powerhouses available for all hours of the month, and they essentially were. We had a couple of minor outages with Forbestown and Kelly for a couple hours each, which is not significant. So the crew are doing a fantastic job of maintaining everything, keeping everything available. The fourth column from the left, generation dispatch at full output. We like to see those numbers high, showing that powerhouses are being run at full nameplate, where they're most efficient. The next table, to your point, Director Hickman, we can see the monthly prices. The on-peak price for ISO, for Cal ISO, the on-peak price was nearly $71. The average was $66. And we can see that the historic averages are quite a bit lower. So we had a case in September where we had not a very large amount of production, but we had good prices, which yielded the revenue. Under maintenance, powerhouses, all four powerhouses are currently in service. We have an outage scheduled for Kelly Ridge Powerhouse in November 1st through 12th. We completed the Slide Creek Powerhouse outage earlier this month. Other project assets, maintenance, just wanted to mention. We have removed from Lillegrass Valley Reservoir the road docks from service. Those are secured out of the water for the winter. There's a few more down. We've also removed all kinds of debris and so forth from the project, just in the waterways and brush and the intake screens. Our crew have performed the quarterly penstock inspections, the actual pipes from the reservoirs down to the powerhouses. These get inspected quarterly. We also had done a repair. This was a compliance inspection-driven repair of the concrete columns, column at Lillegrass Valley Reservoir on the spillway structure. And just doing all sorts of other ongoing maintenance, replacing staff gauges, which measure water levels in reservoirs, working on the crane at Slide Powerhouse, fleet vehicle maintenance going on. Several types of electronics things going on, such as maintaining our two-way radios and other things. Under projects on page three, energy delivery transition projects. So this is about getting set up for South Feather to work with its new scheduling coordinator and control center in Roseville. And so we have several technology projects that the agency has been working on here. Art Martinez, our IT manager, and our techs up at Power Division and have all been working jointly on various aspects of this, and we're very appreciative of the efforts. This comm network project, the first one, involves getting communication networks established throughout our system, between powerhouses and other locations. We've done testing successfully of this here recently between South Feather and NCPA, South Feather and ISO. These networks function. That's very, very positive news. A big step of progress. Next month here, we then do a replacement of the ISO meters for the powerhouses, the Cal ISO meters, and we also replace the SCADA control system as well next month. We've completed the Sunset Comm Slide standby generator work. That's been completed. And then the slide powerhouse restroom, some renovations there were completed as well. On the personnel, we're pleased to announce that Danny Grubbs has transferred to our equipment mechanic operator position in the power division. He has a great deal of valuable training and experience, and we're really glad to have him on the team. He's already making the job his own, getting the shop organized the way he likes, and getting, you know, things, tools and supplies set up. And again, we just really are happy to have him and welcome him to our group. We continue to recruit for a hydro civil engineer, and we have done some online recruitment type sites, websites. We've advertised on our website as well, done some word of mouth, we're looking at taking some next steps as far as recruitment as well to fill this position. Moving into the
this hydro civil engineer recruitment has not gone well. We have been recruiting for months. We had one local applicant that was not nearly qualified for the position or the need, which has then driven us to looking at actual recruiting firms. And even many of the recruiting firms are less than optimistic on our ability to certainly get someone local, but even bring someone in out of the area. So this is a challenge. And this position must be filled because it operates as our dam safety engineer. It will certainly tie into one of our closed session topics later. So we need to find a civil engineer. What that means is we will likely be engaging with an outside recruiting firm, and those are not inexpensive. But we have tried for months on end with no success whatsoever. I mean, the fact that, you know, all the efforts around roadways and bridges and, you know, everything else kind of coming out of the pandemic from that standpoint, all civil engineers are basically employed, right? So what we're going to have to do is we're not looking for someone who's looking for a job. We have to have targeted recruitment where professionals in the industry go draw them out of their current role to come to South Feather. I've exhausted all of my connections trying to find some folks of interest. I know Dan has as well. So there's going to be some recruiting expense outside of the agency in order to accomplish this. I want you to be aware of that.
So what's the main impediment, right? Is it pay? Is it the area?
Well, you know, there's some that would tell you salary and things, and Dan could share, because probably the most reputable recruiting firm, actually the recruiting firm that brought Dan to South Feather, what did she tell us? She felt like our salary was probably in range. It's going to be trying to get someone out of the area to come. So yeah. Share with what she told us.
Yeah, so, you know, there's this perception of the area when this outfit deals with recruiting, and, you know, people either want to, you know, are either going to look at living in a city, or if they want to live in the country, they're then facing some of these, you know, these realities with fires. And so there's really two facets that recruiters, you know, and speaking with them that we're dealing with. One is the recruitment, but also the retention. So one thing we want to avoid is we are successful in recruiting someone, and then we, you know, they learn our system, get trained and everything, and then they gather skills with hydroelectric, and then go to some other utility, for example, which has happened, you know, to us, where more than one employee has vacated the position and gone to work for another utility. Who happens to be doing a lot of rebuilding of infrastructure and electric power lines and so forth in the area. So there is just a great deal of demand for infrastructure rebuilding and repair just throughout, you know, the nation, here in California, post fires, you know, hardening of the electric grid. So it's really comes down to the choices we've looked at, which is we have a certain salary price point, which is maybe lower, more, which seems reasonable. And then we can't track the skill set. or we seek the skill set and then, you know, revise the job description accordingly, then that person is in commanding, you know, $200,000 or more, $210,000, you know, a year, you know, for this position. So it's real disparity there. So it looks like it could be, you know, out of, well, most likely, first question I asked of the recruiter was, can we just do the, you know, 2 hour radius, 1 hour radius, 2 hour radius, and she kind of chuckles and goes, yeah, sure. And this would probably most likely be an out-of-state recruitment, which then has all those challenges, which comes along with it, of, you know, remote, you know, all the interviews and bring somebody in and so forth, all the various stages. So it's and relocate. So these are all kind of, you know, new problems that I kind of was facing and discussing with Ray over the past couple of weeks.
Approximately 3 weeks ago,
yeah,
there were 350
yeah,
open positions in the state of California. So we're competing
yeah,
with 349 other entities just in the state of California.
Wow. And people really
so
are.
If you were a civil engineer, particularly structural background, you were in high demand.
Yeah, so that's the challenge.
So for the cost of living here, though, and the cost of housing, and this position pays incredibly well for the area, at that ratio, we should be looking pretty good.
Well, that's one thing that we
right,
will
we
try to
be
right,
top
right,
of that. I mean, 160,000
yeah,
here is a whole lot more than 200,000 in the area.
Yep, exactly.
So we have that going for us.
Thrilled.
So what I heard is the perception of the area and getting somebody to move here.
Well, you know, the apparently the situation with the reality of fires and forests is of a big concern to the people that this recruiter has spoken with. They see two realities in California. One is you live in a congested city and traffic and pollution, or you live in the forest which has fires. And you know, that's just, you know, from that, I mean, I don't see it that way. You know, we don't see, you know, don't see that simplistically. But somebody from out of state might view it that way. So it's, and you're right. You know, with Reverend Hickman, it is something that is we can try to attract with, which is the cost of living here in comparison to, you know, to the wage. It is
what we've been paying.
Yeah, it seems like it's, that'd be great. But
it's those brown lawns in Oribo.
Yeah.
It's even leaking over the side.
It's the empty lake recreation that they don't have.
John Shipman just whispered in my ear that he believes that PG&E, because I know they're recruiting as well, they're flying folks in from Colorado to perform civil engineering work for them here in California.
Yeah, they're on 1 year contracts. So, the lady that works at the Chico office is second or third year. So
I'm not trying to make it doom and gloom, but we have to find a resource. It's not optional, and we're going to have to spend some money to get the person.
Horville also has the same problem. I'm taking several doctors that Bob Wentz has brought up here and want to move. Drive around Horville, look at what we have. The wives say there's not the shopping. The schools don't have the best reputation. Downtown doesn't have activity for the families. And a lot of them moved to Roseville or somewhere else, and they bust them up every day into the hospital here. Horville just hasn't had a drawing card that people want to come to.
And really, my point is, we will find someone. It's just going to take a specialist to do that all day long to help us get there, and that's not free.
Right.
Just want you to be aware.
Excellent. So, with all the people moving to Idaho in particular, I've been hearing all kinds of Idaho reports, and I hear that in Idaho, a licensed electrical engineer starting out is only making $18 an hour.
That's correct.
And right now, you have houses in Idaho that are more than houses
yeah,
in Oroville right now, so maybe Idaho's the place we should do it.
And what this firm did share with me too is that folks are moving out of this, you know, moving out of state, and then, you know, vacating the civil engineering jobs. That's also created this, you know, this demand. So there is that exodus of people, even in spite of those, like you said. Yeah, good point.
How many places do you advertise for the recruit for this?
We've done the, you know, the Indeed and other you know, websites, and of course
double digits in total,
yeah,
including
yeah,
local recruiting firms and then recruiting
yeah,
firms in Sacramento and even out of state. Looked at
yeah, it's getting kind of a frustration. No. So, but
TikTok, you guys think outside of the box yet?
All fairness, we didn't do a TikTok.
That's true.
Someone shows us how long.
Yeah, I'm
not sure how that works.
What
kind of
profession? All right, any questions more for Dan?
All right, Kristen, let's get you up.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Good afternoon, directors. I just have an update on the regulatory compliance items for each of our categories of our water rights permits. Last week, the management team in Power Division went out with three engineers from Division SET of Dams and DWR. We had our regional engineer joined along, and kind of you can tell when the staff engineers say, this is our regional engineer, like, take note of how important this is. Unbeknownst to us, he was there to perform our final construction inspection for Lost Creek. So that was encouraging that we're moving through that process, and hopefully we'll be wrapping up that soon enough. We still have the FERC side to obtain approvals and final construction reports and all of those things, but we're moving in a better direction toward wrapping things up and gaining approval from DSOD. Another good thing that came from those field inspections is that one of the engineers was able to look at Miners Ranch Dam, which you already heard that we are making payment on our inundation mapping effort. DSOD post Oroville spillway incident has now required, in many cases, those are criteria that our engineering firm has pushed back on whether or not we qualify at Miners Ranch Dam for the low-level outlet being considered a critical pertinent structure. So there's been some back and forth on that. Hopefully one of these senior engineers assigned to our inspection will, he's already called a meeting for us and is going to advocate for us on that so that we can wrap that piece up. Aside from those things, the inspections went tremendously well. All of the staff involved with the very precise working of all of the gates, the valves, all of the operation pieces that rotate through a three-year inspection protocol with DSOD all have to be very precisely timed, especially in between the windows of outages and annual PMs, and then our water transfer timing in and around that as well. So just very appreciative to all of our Power Division staff, and then our maintenance foreman for the Water Division as well, because the Lake Wyandotte Dam is a jurisdictional dam for DSOD, but not for FERC. So we did do all 9 dams in 2 days and beat all of the inclement weather for that. As far as our domestic water, even ahead of this weekend's storm event, all of the curtailment notices for each of our water rights was lifted. That's something that's been taking place on a weekly basis. The State Water Board sending out those status updates on curtailment. And even though we are currently in a temporary suspension of our curtailment notice, that doesn't get us out of the monthly reporting requirement. So we still are required to submit that by the 10th of each month. Again, that's the report for our diversions, our actual diversions, and then our projected diversions for the next rolling 3 months. Our again, right ahead of this storm, the governor declared, extended the drought emergency to cover all counties of the state, and pointed out that statewide domestic voluntary reduction of water use fell short of his 15% goal. It was only about 5%. So again, all of these different reporting requirements, the state is heavily monitoring domestic consumption for urban water suppliers. On the irrigation side, that season closed on the 18th, and staff is in preparation for winter months, winterizing, and ensuring that everything is clear for water movement like we had this weekend. And then with the recreation component, all of the campgrounds, all of the Forest Service campgrounds throughout the project have now been closed for the winter season. We've done all of our closing garbage runs, the septic vaults have all been pumped, and so we're all good on that piece as well. Any questions?
Thank you. Kristen?
Yes.
I know they had to close them all down because of fire hazard.
Only Sly was closed. Sly Campground and the boat launch was closed this year because of the salvage logging operations in behind those campgrounds and the truck traffic.
They had a short camping season.
they had no camping season at Sly. Strawberry and Little Grass were all open, though, for the regular season.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Okay. For water division, I'll start with domestic water treatment operations. You can see that Minor Trends treatment plant, our trend was slightly down, as you might expect, as we go into the colder climate. So we produced just under 229 million gallons out of our main treatment facility. And then Bangor, we were just under a million gallons. And then I'm going to continue to report Red Hawk Ranch pump station for a while. John and the team tracked this for us out of the treatment facilities. And our total production was over 1.1 million gallons or within that range. So it's continuing to be used as we expected. You might expect that if you're a citizen and you're buying into a program. And so that's a good sign it is being used. We have a total of 16 connections now in that system. Notice that there is another property out there within that area that went up on the market. I would guess, because that person did not participate, that once that property sells, we'll probably be receiving an application for service for that one as well. And assuming the Red Hawk Ranch group, the community group, decides to let them buy in, that might be an additional connection. We've got a total of 17. You can see the trend. Our low for the month was 6.3 million gallons of production in a day, and our peak was at 8.6 million throughout the month, which then averaged out at about 7.6. For irrigation, as Kristen communicated, the irrigation season closed on the 18th. We probably couldn't have stopped any later than that, as we all well know, since the time of writing this board report. What I can tell you is we were pleased because our work from the previous irrigation season to this one resulted in about a decrease of 36% in overall consumption and loss throughout the conveyance system. So our efforts on maintenance with mechanical work, carpet plugging, shotcrete in areas that may need it, etc., we are continuing to make improvements and needing less water to actually reach its final destination. We also realized savings in thermal and Bangor systems as well. In terms of district-wide operations, and I understated it here because this was written prior to this last weekend, our emphasis moved on to continued vegetation management and general cleanup. Spent a fair amount of time at Lake Wyandotte and the surrounding areas this month. That is now shifted to tree cleanup and debris. This last weekend, we have, in particular, oak trees that are dropped throughout the district. Not so much pines this year, which is interesting so far as we went through that storm. That there must be something with the soil and the drought and how it impacted the oak trees. Yeah, and so we've done all the emergency work, or most of it to this point, to keep things flowing and not damaging assets, but now there's going to be real focus on cleaning up all of those dropped trees, etc., and get those out of the way and be prepared prior to next season. Again, you can see on the chart here on the second page the types of items we did work on. We did replace a couple of culverts. We only installed two new services this month. We've been trending at about 4 to 6. That's down slightly. Leak repairs continue to be between 5 and 6 per month. You can see those locations. So as a director, you know your areas and your constituents that your primary division is in. You can see if those addresses connect with you or not. We had a couple backflow replacements, etc., as you go across. And of course, I spoke about vegetation management. We did need to perform an emergency culvert conversion to pipe repair on Mount Ida. So this one happened near Mount Ida Pioneer Trail. John, that would, I think, be in your division there. And fire department actually contacted us on that one in the middle of the night and had a collapse of the culvert underneath in the concrete. So we had to get out there and pull an emergency encroachment permit, replace it all across the roadway, and repatch, etc. But that was all taken care of in about a day and a half or so. We have another one planned out in South Villa, the Plano area, so Director Wilburn. That'll be about 160 feet of pipe there. That's raw water conveyance pipe, but it's pretty Swiss cheese. So we've pulled permits for that one, and we'll work on that here in about another week or two. So it is on the east part of South Villa.
So the existing canal is that?
Exactly.
Yeah, it was flooded over the weekend.
Yeah, so we'll get that all replaced and repaired either the first week of November or the second week, waiting on some materials.
You guys expanded about 2 more blocks my way?
Well, the flow probably went 2 more blocks your way.
Yeah, it's kind of pissed off.
We do have a long-term plan. That 160 feet is just the beginning. We really need to replace about 2,000 feet over the next couple of years. Questions or comments on water division operations? Okay, let's talk about November and December board meetings. We discuss this each year. It's that time of year where we talk about that based on timing of when Thanksgiving is, how that aligns with our regularly scheduled board meetings, and the same with December. It's a whole holiday season. So right now, our regularly scheduled board meeting for November is on the 23rd. Of course, that's the week of Thanksgiving, so we can talk about that a little bit. And then December, it's the 28th. And so a lot of times, you know, there's some staffing issues, availability, et cetera, between at least that Christmas and New Year period. So let's talk about if we should move either November, December, or both meetings around to accommodate people's personal schedules during the holiday season.
I will not be here the week of Thanksgiving.
Okay, so that entire week. So, okay, and then what about on December? Let's talk about Christmas real quick. So December 28th. See, the challenge with that week is really staffing. A lot of times people are gone all the way through the New Year. So I would like to propose moving the December meeting up, if we could, to the 21st, if you guys are interested in doing so. And then we can circle back and discuss the November meeting and how many weeks between meetings, if we change that one or operate with 4 versus 5 board directors.
I'm fine with moving to the 21st.
I'm good with that.
Director Hickman?
Or yeah, I'm flexible.
Your availability, I think sometimes you travel around that time.
Yeah. No, I'll be okay with whatever.
Okay.
I'm fine.
Director Wright?
I have a 4 p.m. council meeting on the 21st.
On the 21st? 4 p.m. What if I send a note with you?
Our arms will get down in 2 hours.
Yeah. Okay, so. And really, we just need to make sure we have a quorum. And then how about November? So if Director Woolburn is out on the 23rd, which is a regularly scheduled meeting, are you available on the 23rd?
Yes.
Moreland?
Yep.
Hickman?
Yep.
Starr?
Yes.
So it would be okay if we operate with 4 board directors instead of trying to move that one around? Because what that would do, because we're only 3 weeks away from our December meeting if we do that.
Yeah.
Okay, so we will plan on November 23rd is regularly scheduled. We plan on having 4 directors. And then we will move December 28th board meeting up to December 21st, knowing that Director Wright, you know, would either not be present or would need to leave, say, at 3 o'clock, so 1 hour in. Either way, would that work for you to give you time to prepare? Probably assume not present for that one.
They do closed session first, so
I
probably have
to 4:30. Well, that's okay. I mean, I know you have to prepare and present likely as well. We'll there. Okay. Who do we lose? So let the record show that Director Moreland stepped out at 3:26. Okay, Water Division mechanic vacancy real quick. So you heard Dan speak to Danny Grubbs transferring from Water Division to Power Division, the role mechanic. So we have been recruiting for the position in Water Division. We had no internal applicants. We had 9 externals. We sorted that down to 5, and we are on our second round of conversations with 2. So we think we've narrowed it down to 1 of 2 candidates. We have a follow-up. We've already met twice in person with 1, and we're going to meet as a group for the second one this coming Monday, and then we'll make a decision at that point on who we will offer the position to. And then real quick, I think you guys have already heard about the water transfer, so we did start that on the 18th. You've heard Dan talk about that we've achieved the transfer of 8,000 acre feet. And then there's a couple little issues we're working through with the Delta and DWR. Those may or may not be alleviated as a result of this last storm. We'll know that Wednesday afternoon, tomorrow afternoon. and next steps there. Questions or comments in terms of staff report?
Thank you, Rick. Mm-hmm.
So if we could go into business items, tab 6. So tab 6 is a request for approval of another annexation. So it's been a good year for annexations. We've been really moving along on this one. This one's a little bit different. So this is a raw water annexation, not necessarily a domestic annexation. And so this particular property is just under 90 acres. And it historically had some leakage or runoff water that reached their property over a number of years. And through our maintenance of our ditch and canal systems, we pinched that off. We weren't, you know, going out to target and do that intentionally to the property, but as we're trying to manage loss and conveyance and how we report, we made improvements which impacted water that would reach this parcel. So this landowner is applying for annexation, paying all the fees to go through that process. So I'm asking for approval to adopt a resolution today to approve annexation of the said 90 acres. It will then go to LAFCO for their review and approval process. As you thumb through the adjoining sheets here, you'll see the application. Highlighted in blue on the parcel map is the APN to show you the size of this property. If this property owner ever wanted to in the future fund a mainline extension, they're also eligible for domestic by being annexed into the district because there is a mainline that travels down from the boulevard. They're looking at that, trying to pencil out what that expense would be. So there's a potential this property would have both a domestic account in the future as well as an irrigation account. What is not in this packet for you today are the plats and legal descriptions. So the external engineering firm is working on those. Those are really a requirement for the LAFCO review process. And I didn't want to delay the annexation by another month, so I chose to go ahead and put that in. But all the rest of the application, legal descriptions, everything else is in the packet. Any questions on the request for annexation? We're able to serve. This is a good thing. We continue to identify ways to bring more properties into the district. This one's nice because it's a sizable parcel.
Okay. Okay. All right. I move adoption of resolution number 6-21 approving annexation of APN 079-270-048 and submitting an application for annexation to LAFCO.
Second.
Got first and second.
Ray, just a question. Again, sorry, I didn't catch this until just now. Your agenda says resolution 21-26B-10, and your proposed form of motion has a different resolution number.
Yeah, so I will correct that. The actual resolution to be signed is what the agenda says, 21-26B-10. So my cover sheet is what's not updated, but the resolution itself is accurate. Thank you for pointing that out.
So, Rick, did you catch that? The form of the motion would be to adopt resolution 21-26B-10.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. Like I said, the resolution you'll be signing today, once adopted, okay, has the correct number on it.
So, let me make a better motion then. I move adoption of resolution 21-26B-10 for approving annexation of APN 079-270-048 and submitting the application for annexation to LAFCO. Did I get that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So we've got a second. Okay, first and second. Any public comments? Not online?
Nothing in the inbox as of 3:31.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Five eyes.
I just noticed something. So I've got two RWs now. So can one of you provide me a middle initial?
H.
Thank you. Otherwise, I'll be confused.
Oh, no.
Perfect. Thank you, Board.
What does he do with the property?
What?
There's a building on the property, 90 acres.
Just a single dwelling and a barn.
Okay.
So this is basically the annex in the district so they can have an actual irrigation account with the district. No plans of development of how it puts here.
Let's move on to the next, tab 7.
Ray printed out a copy of the presentation that we're going to put up on the screen here to share with the public and everybody else here in the room. If you have any questions, you can jot those down or make notes on the slides as we walk through the process. What we're presenting to you today is some of the key components of some emergency drought funding that's available through the state's fiscal year 21-22 budget and associated trailer bill that designated funds for urban water users in the drought emergency crisis. We currently have pulled together an internal team and a couple of the Ludorf-Scalmanini team that are working with us on this project. And so over the last couple of weeks, Jacques DeBray and Eddie Teasdale from Ludorf-Scalmanini, as well as John Shipman, Rafe, and Scott Dehoff, Art, and his team have been working to pull together all of the data that's required to be ready to submit this. We did, since I put the packet together, we do have an application deadline, which is November 19th. So I'm gonna go ahead and walk through the presentation and kind of set the stage for where our focus is going to be through the next year and how we think that we can align with all of the criteria of the grant proposal solicitation package and hopefully put us in the running to receive these grant dollars. Next slide, please. Oh, that squished a little bit. So the agency is proposing to work through a multi-prong approach to improve water use efficiency and drought resiliency throughout the next year and all the coming years. First through supply reliability, water system efficiency improvements, capital improvement planning to map out infrastructure improvements and seeking funding to do so, and then utility rate planning in support of all of the operational improvements that are going to be required to continue not only maintaining compliance with all of our state requirements, but also to continue delivering high quality, reliable water to our customers. Following the 5-year drought conditions in California between 2012 and 2016, there were several pieces of legislation codified that were intending to better prepare our state for future drought conditions. Aside from being good stewards of our resource that we manage, the agency is also working to comply with all of these new legal requirements put on urban water systems. The agency is facing these compliance and capital improvement requirements that are going to require that at some point in the future we look at a rate structure review. The state has outlined this myriad of new requirements for agencies like ours with no funding assistance as a consideration for that. So we have to be able to plan to strategically put ourselves in a position to receive as many grant funds as we possibly can, as well as balance that out with internal resources. So we'll be looking to secure that grant funding when available. And this grant opportunity that we're introducing today is quite a unique opportunity in that it doesn't have all of the conditions that are typically put out in traditional funding opportunities, because it is an emergency rollout of funding to meet needs brought on by this current drought situation. There are not all of the requirements for a cost match piece or for in-kind contribution or for some of the solvency requirements for the agency to demonstrate that the rate structure is adequate to meet financial and service obligations related to water system operations or upgrades, and that's typically a component that's a requirement of any type of shovel-ready infrastructure type funding. It's something that the agency has looked at in the past, and next slide, please. And along with some of the concerns raised about solvency associated with rate structure, we also had some things that we had to catch up to speed on with regard to regulatory compliance as well. So you can see that there's quite an expanded laundry list, and every month I've been bringing updates about regulatory compliance items associated with each component of all of our water rates permits. But this is just kind of a snapshot to give you an idea of all the pieces that this grant opportunity is expecting our agency to be in compliance with. As part of the grant application packet, you have to self-certify that you are in fact in compliance, that you have an adopted 2020 Urban Water Management Plan and an associated water shortage contingency plan. That as a surface water diverter, that all of your annual water rights progress reports are current and up to date, as well as the current requirement for the Delta Watershed curtailment reporting. We also have our, as an urban water supplier, the monthly monitoring reports. Then we have our annual water loss audits that we just recently brought an update to you on the certified validations that took place over the last 3 calendar years. And then water system metering, the agency's been in compliance with that for years. And then also you have to certify that you have been collaboratively working with a local entity in charge of groundwater monitoring. And then as part of the SGMA process that came out of the 2014 drought period, all of the sustainable management planning efforts that are taking place, of which Director Woolburn and myself are associated with the Wyandotte Creek subbasin and working on that groundwater sustainability plan. One of the components of that sustainability, that draft plan, is for water loss monitoring, and of that we specifically are listed with the other water providers in the area that are interested in trying to look at all of the ways that we can conserve water loss for the intent of beneficial use and sustainability in our sub-basin, and even in some cases potentially offsetting groundwater dependency. So long story short, we've got ourselves well positioned to be able to apply for something that came up as an emergency like this. It would have been a real problem to try and comply with this. We would have missed the opportunity had we not positioned ourselves over the last year and a half. Next slide, please. As I mentioned, this funding comes from the legislative adoption of the 2021 budget and associated trailer bills. The typical requirements are not outlined in this funding. It's $190 million available for urban water suppliers through either drought resiliency projects for urban suppliers or for multi-benefit projects, which would be species and that sort of thing. So we would be going for the urban water supplier drought resiliency side of things. The applications are due November 19th, and it's basically first come, first serve. So everybody that is ready and submits an application, you get yourself in the queue, and they are reviewed by state staff as they're received. They look at your self-certification. Do you have your adopted resolution? And how does your project align with all of the eligibility requirements and components of the grant narrative? So,
isn't the deadline's November? Would you say November 21st?
November 19th is when they open the opportunity for you to submit the grant applications. It's not a hard stop on that date. Okay. So they will continue accepting applications, but the applications that are received first will be reviewed, scored, and eligible for funds first. So it behooves us to get that submitted on that date to make sure that we have the highest priority in that review process.
You're going to be working late on the 18th?
we've spent quite a bit of time already. Staff has been working to pull data together in support of the application, and so we're well on our way. So you'll see a couple slides later the components of a water loss control program that we're proposing to apply for these funds for. But all of the components of the project are to benefit short-term drought relief and then also the long-term resiliency that all of these efforts born in the last drought period and implemented through legislation and that we're working to comply with. All of these projects will help us comply with each of those components of the statewide endeavor for resiliency. So next slide. So our proposed project scope for a water loss control improvement project focuses highly on leak repair and determining which areas of our service area are known for leaks. Where could we potentially begin the process of water loss auditing, which is something that's going to be a state water board requirement here in the next year, or at least that's their targeted date for program implementation. Figuring out how we're going to strategically approach conducting those leak assessments and surveys, and then actually asking for infrastructure dollars for replacement of those areas that we know currently are our highest problematic areas. And then meter accuracy. We know that meter shelf life is about 25 years. There's a consistent decline after meters are reach that age, and we have close to 4,300 meters that fall in that category of over 25 years old. So not only are we working to ensure compatibility with all of the automated metering infrastructure updates that ART is working on, but we'll actually do some replacement of metering and work with staff to improve standardized operation of installation and kind of just oversight on how those meters are performing once they're replaced. And then water theft security. We've had multiple discussions here in this boardroom about the summer that we had with concerns over theft of water from our system. And those issues impact all of the customers. It impacts, even if it's not something that they're paying for directly, it's something that diverts staff time and resources to pick up the balance on. So we are looking at potentially purchasing anti-theft devices. Next slide, please. I should have had them roll to this slide. So we picked out 80 of the highest frequented hydrants throughout our system for priority to do a locking mechanism so that we would be able to start better controlling where water is being taken throughout our system. So these are areas that are highly accessible and visible, and John put quite a bit of effort into working on this with Water Division staff as well as IT staff. And so I don't know if you have anything that you wanted to add on either of these. And then Wraith did work with staff also on the defining of the three highest priority leak repair areas. So that's just a snapshot of one of those locations, but just to like, kind of give you an idea that we're well on our way of compiling this project proposal. And next slide, please. So here's the proposed project budget to that we're looking to move forward. So the total ask for this will be $840,000, which again is a unique opportunity because typically there's not grant funds that are at this large number available to us. So the main components would be for hydrant theft security, and that would cover anti-theft devices for up to 80 hydrants. The system leak surveys and repairs, and that would be that leak detection survey process, and then the associated infrastructure, just as much as we could possibly replace for that $250,000 category. We are also, one component that I haven't touched on yet is we're looking to do an assessment of our existing baseline mapping of our GIS program and make upgrades as necessary, predominantly for the water system, and then with the hopes of eventually doing that system analysis agency-wide and incorporating and doing upgrades down the road based on building off of this work for the power division side as well. The key component of system upgrades for the GIS base mapping is that we will be able to heavily incorporate a field aspect of both ground truthing, but also all of the future infrastructure placement and repairs and everything. We can begin mapping that and then start really using the power and utility of GIS for our capital improvement planning, for our infrastructure tracking and asset management, and a number of different things. And then again, the meter accuracy improvement. I forgot how many meters we said we were going to do in that.
4,200. Well, 1,000.
I thought, yeah.
It's about $300 a piece, and I think we have $300,000 in there.
Yeah. So. 25%. We'll strike. You know, all things being dependent on supply chain issues, of course. So. We'll make the money stretch as far as we possibly can if we are awarded. And then there's a line item for grant administration for oversight, and then any associated staff training that would come from any of these infrastructure improvements. Next slide, please. And just to let you know that we are shovel ready for this project. So we've already gone through all of the grant criteria with the help of the Ludor Scalmanini team and come up with a project outline and basically done our comparison for readiness. And we have our information outlined and submitted for the water theft security for those 80 hydrants. The meter accuracy program, we've gone through old records. We're still working to kind of target where we would do all of those meter replacements, working on criteria to define which of those that would be. And then the GIS updates, Art and myself met with the team yesterday to do some initial assessments on where we are hardware, software, data, and staff capability wise. And so we're moving on that. And then the leak survey and repair, we're already have those three high priority areas identified and existing infrastructure that could potentially be replaced under that component as well. So we are ready to demonstrate our grant funding proposal compatibility. We are shovel ready and we can demonstrate that. We are able to do the self-certification, and then we also need to supply the approved resolution with the application package. Next slide, please. So this would be, if we were to submit and be awarded around the general time frame that DWR is suggesting that they might be able to provide, again, pushing those funds out, that would be sometime in, likely in the first quarter of 2022, that DWR would be able to start doing the funding agreements and pushing funds out for that. So if this was a project that, if this grant is something that we could get funded, we could likely move through and have this project entirely completed by the end of quarter two in 2023. I know that didn't actually turn out very well on that slide there. It's difficult to read, but if you have any questions about the proposed project or the funding opportunity or anything at all, I'd be more than happy to answer those questions. And then, next slide, please. We do need to, if the board is willing, move to adopt the resolution authorizing the general manager to participate in the funding process, apply for the grant funds, and receive and administer funds on behalf of the agency. And if we can move through that process, then we will be ready to submit our application on the day that the application portal opens on November 19th.
I think that's good for the district and the funding we're going to have.
It would be an awesome leveraging opportunity for the agency because we have not gotten large, high-dollar grant funds, correct me if I'm wrong, to this at this level. And so for the agency to be awarded funding and really accomplish something that is drought resiliency focused, but also helps us to comply and demonstrate goodwill towards moving toward compliance with all of these other mentioned items. And then, you know, it can't go unsaid that we do serve a number of disadvantaged communities. We have tribal lands that are included in our service area. And so there is, you know, those are items that this funding opportunity is looking for applicants to demonstrate, which we do check both of those boxes as well. So overall, great benefit and great leverage for the agency for future opportunity.
Sounds great.
Only 800,000.
Well, we started off at 300 and I got it bumped up to 840, so.
The rule of thumb, or at least on this project, we thought that 500,000 or less is what puts you at the top of the list for probability and the probability curve to receive funding. This project grew to 840, but we really feel strongly with Chris and the team's work that it is completely defendable and it still stays up through the top. What you don't want to do is get scared off in that process and end up farther down and not get approved, right? So as it is, we're stretching where we're at. There's no infinite amount of funds we need to make improvements. 840 is just the start, right?
And there is a possibility that the state would come back and say, no, we're only going to fund 500,000,
right?
And then that would be management's decision on how we might proceed in that situation. But we know that we can defend the need for our agency for each component of the project.
I will tell you, late 22 and 2023 are, if this goes through and the Palermo project goes through, you're talking about major fundamental changes in this agency, right, with the work we do, et cetera. You couple that with the power purchase agreement, these other activities we're working on, our strategic plan is seeing reality, right? And these things don't happen quick, certainly not fast enough for me and probably you either, but we are seeing the results of these.
That's really good to be heads up and be your shovel ready. That's huge.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
And there's nothing in the rules that say an agency can only get so much of a percentage of that money, right? There's nothing.
There is nothing, but we, back of the napkin math, kind of looked at how many agencies are eligible, how much money is available, and did, okay, if they distributed funds to every urban water supplier, if everybody applied, how much could everybody get? And then just kind of went in that sweet spot, as Ray mentioned, what do we think we absolutely for sure could get? And, we don't want to go in and ask for $15 million and, get thrown out of the consideration right off the bat. But
we even considered multiple requests, right? The thought that would create a problem as well. So we want to get this first one under our belt and go after the next, and just keep winning on grants.
Okay.
So it's not a one and done by any means.
The need is definitely here. This area, someday's going to grow. We have a good water source and that's it.
Well, that's one. Look at all the new connections we've done over the last 18 months, the annexations, etc. We are growing. It's just not at a highly visible rate. But we need to keep up with regulatory compliance as well. And that's what this helps us do.
Okay.
Well, good. I'll make a motion. I'd like to make a motion. I move adoption of Resolution 21-26C-10, authorizing the general manager to prepare and submit a complete WR grant application to accept grant funding approval and execute the DWR grant application funding agreement upon approval on behalf of the South Better Water and Power Agency Water Loss Control Improvement Project.
And a first.
A second.
Any public comments?
No, I'm not.
Nothing in the inbox as of 3:56.
All in favor?
Aye.
Five ayes. Thank you, Chris, and thank you, Ray, for all our work. Probably everybody else that did that. That's great. Keep getting good at those grants, Chris. Why don't you make you do some more of those? Kind of like double-edged sword. All right.
It's a good problem to have.
Yes, great problem to have. Public comments. Any public comments?
We have an informational item, I believe. What's the next?
Let's take one. All right, tab 9, okay.
Yeah, so real quick, so you want me to take this or you want me to take this? This is just an information item. Finance manager Steve Wong referenced this during his staff report. This is the request that we've sent out for a request for proposals for independent annual audit contract. So wanted you to have that and see what that content looks like and what we've sent out to folks to start soliciting bids for our next series of independent audits. So I just wanted you to see that content. That's why it's an information item, no action on your part.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Now, let's move into public comment.
Reminder, if you have a comment, press star 9. No comments online.
Nothing received as of 3:58.
So they move into director's reports then. John, you want to start us off?
I'm glad to have Ruth aboard to build a position. I think she'll do a great job. I'm glad to have
her. I'll go after Dennis. I don't want to say anything redundant. I think there's something to say with this.
So we'll start with go to Ruth and next. Yeah.
I just want to say thank you for my appointment, and I look forward to working with you for the next 12 months.
Great. I want to thank Ruth. Stepping forward and helping this company. This is a great company. Welcome you on board. Anything you need, if you need any help, we're here for you.
Thank you.
I'll get you my phone number and keep in touch. And then in the last few weeks, me and Todd have been looking for water big time. Storage off the old map, and we figured a bunch of it out. And hopefully we can get something going. But every time it rains like this, it washes the flood plans away and the water storage plans away, but you never know. And this state is drastically growing and it's out of water, so we need to keep pushing. I want to thank staff for all the hard times you've been through, with the COVID, the fires, and all the bad attitudes. It's not fun. And thank you guys very much for all your hard work.
Ruth, welcome aboard. Look forward to working with you the next few requests here. Thank you to all the hard work everyone's done. It's always nice to apply for grants and kind of look at it as like free money. Always helps out at the bottom line on our budget, so that's exciting. So it's fun to see South Feather moving in the right direction. That's all I got. All right, why don't we take a couple minute break and then we'll go into closed session.
I'll try to read.
I'm sorry, you want to say
anything? No, I would just second that everything that everybody said. Welcome aboard to the team, Ruth. It's a fabulous place to be. And again, I just second all the positive comments that everybody else said.
Any comments on closed session before we recess for a minute here?
Not online?
Nothing as of 4 p.m.
Let's take a couple minute break and we'll go into closed session.
Yes. Can you get you notarized real quick here to recess?
Is that agreement for you?
Thank you.
Back into open session. In closed session, direction was given to real property negotiators and legal counsel. Any additional public comment out there?
One more is closed.
All right. Meeting adjourned.
As of 5:07.
All right, thank you. Meeting adjourned.